So good morning, everyone. It's so nice to see many familiar faces, but also equally nice to see non-familiar faces in the audience. For those who don't know me, my name is Minna Seikkula. And as I've moved about in these, well, academic spaces, discussing decolonial critique and decoloniality, I've encountered this custom to the Tamiya by Sami scholars that to me appears very beautiful, where they, or I think, I guess they've adopted the way of when meeting and greeting, to present your family and present your ancestors and tell like who you are by telling who your family is. Well, that's not my heritage, obviously, but I guess it's good to think who we are and where we come from, as we are having these discussions about decoloniality. And I guess these were some of the questions that were addressed also yesterday here. But so maybe my take on this is also that I'm trained to begin with in feminist theory. As I guess many of you must know, there's a lot of, in the field of different feminist theorizations, there's a big discussion that it's important to identify one's location. But I think part of that identifying one's location, it's not just, or like your epistemic location is also important. So as I said, I've kind of, and now when I talk about the academic, I guess I'm at the university, maybe not all of you are, but I guess what I'm referring as the academic is this practice that now we've gathered in this room that kind of very much emphasizes that only speaking and writing are important, and we don't have any windows here, and we just are these talking heads, which is very interesting environment to discuss decolonial critique. But anyway, so I've started my academic journey in women and gender studies, where I encountered this feminist post-colonial theorization that kind of then led me to become interested in critical race and whiteness studies, as well as this decolonial critique and decolonial studies later on. But this is kind of the journey that I've taken, and the title of the presentation, Decolonial Critique and Academic Practice, aims to this my constant wondering that what is this, what can we do? I'm based at the University of Helsinki, and I mainly move about in the Nordic academia. So what do we do, if anything, with this notion of decolonial, and kind of what's the point of it? This is not working. Okay.
The problem will still there. Is it all right?
Yeah, it's fine. I had a couple of slides just more to maybe make it easier for you to follow, but like bear with me. What, I guess I'm fine. I hope you are too. Let's try to be fine together. And yeah, if I'm unclear or something, just interrupt me, and or if you have a question or a comment anytime. But yeah, make a really big gesture so that I know this. But so what I thought about saying here is kind of my thoughts on how do I understand the notion of decolonial and the decolonial critique. And then I thought of saying something more specifically about race and racism. As Juho just said, colonialism is always racism, as we learned from Fanon, but like briefly visit this idea even more, and then kind of discuss these implication of the decolonial critique to our knowledge practices. So to think that what's the point of of doing all of this, or like why are we mentioning decoloniality, and what could we do with it in practice? So I have this reading, I don't know how you see it, but that theorizing decoloniality or discussing it has become immensely popular during the couple of the recent years, and it even appears this kind of buzzword. Well, as I kind of already said, so I'm very curious that what's the point of it, because to be honest, I feel that I've seen like people who are practicing their thinking within the university institution, I've seen these presentations where I've just thought about that, okay, now we are addressing something as decolonial, but like maybe 5 years ago that would have been post-colonial, 10 years ago that would have been multiculturalism, and like the kind of the word changes, but the presentation is kind of the same. And of course now I'm being a bit provocative, but like actually thinking that what's then the point of talking about decolonial critique, and what are we to do with it? And how I thought of approaching this is to kind of compare or say something about this these two traditions of post-colonial studies and decolonial studies that sometimes are presented as, or like, and I guess the people who are participating in developing these disciplines or whatever trains of thought, they sometimes underscores that these are two really, really different disciplines that are in clash with each other. That might not be exactly my take, but it's maybe good to recognize some differences here. I understood from Jukka that you haven't so much discussed where this like decolonial theorization, like where it comes from and kind of the history of that. Am I right? Yeah? Okay. But let's start from the post-colonial, because I'm sure many of you know, but it kind of... So obviously, both theory traditions, they have a lot of revolutionary thinkers behind them, and like it didn't start, for instance, from 1978 when Edward Said published the book Orientalism, which is kind of quoted as one of the classics of the post-colonial school, but like there's stuff before that, but we don't have the time to go into that. But anyway, the post-colonial thought as this kind of established academic practice emerged from this subaltern studies group people studying located in Middle East and Southeast Asia mainly, and like one could say that it has a relation to them, or thinkers who are somehow placed geographically what used to be the British Empire, if we are now referring to the belly of the beast and the giving coloniality the space to define the geography. But anyway, and so there has been this critique that the post-colonial with the prefix post would imply that we think that colonialism is now over, and that's kind of problematic with the post-colonial thought. But like, it might not be, in my opinion, as simple as that. That it's also there has been like the takeaway from post-colonial theory is to think that how like there are these traces of coloniality still in the contemporary world, but it has also mainly for a lot of focused, especially the way it's been represented in the Nordic academia. It's focused on representations, and it's this kind of cultural studies thing. Whereas maybe the decolonial thought then more explicitly links to these material ongoing struggles as well. So the decolonial people might position themselves that in the way that whereas the postcolonial texts kind of has a reference to colonialism and Europe, the decolonial school developed by scholars mainly in Latin America, they are kind of making a break or to the Eurocentric ways of seeing the world and kind of developing, or the aim is to develop something separate from that, which differentiates it from the post-colonial thought. But as I said, I think like one of the reasons why to, or like one of the values maybe to rely on the notion and engage with the decolonial critique might be that it kind of encourages to engage with these ongoing struggles of decolonization more directly. Oh yeah, and one thing that I meant to say that it's maybe noteworthy is that so there, as the post-colonial text, like the analysis often looks at the world from the 19th century on, the decolonial starts to, or like the analysis of the power relation starts like earlier on, and it sees the it sees like 1492, the kind of overseas colonial expansion from Europe as the defining point when this kind of colonial world order is established. So colonial as different from colonialism. So colonialism as the historical thing that took place, for instance, beginning from 1492, and coloniality as this way of how the power relations established then still like unfold in the world we live in. Yeah, maybe the slides would have been helpful for you, but anyway. So moving on to what the decolonial critique then kind of is about. One of the central thinkers of the decolonial thought, Anibal Quijano, established this notion of modernity / coloniality, kind of emphasizing that the way we think of modernity or European modernity, it's always tied to the notion of coloniality. So modernity always has this darker side, that it's always been about exploitations and different forms of violence against colonized people, lands, and so forth. And then the scholars engaging with decoloniality have like identified it in different realms, and I'm sure this was something you discussed yesterday. So like coloniality of power, knowledge, and being. So it's all around, and maybe I don't need to go more into that. But then kind of focusing on what's said about decolonizing knowledge, maybe in particular, given that thought is in the title of this summer school. So if the colonial relation still kind of defined our ways of thinking, and then one thing maybe to just to establish what's my position here. So in regard of this modernity coloniality, of course it's a divide that in large divides worlds to the so-called West and the rest, or however we call this divide. But then again, maybe there's been a lot of discussion that maybe we can talk about multiple modernities, and also there are maybe these pockets of a coloniality within Europe as well, and as I said, also that they are always tied together, but also that thinking of how people, for instance, in detention centers in Europe are treated, we can for sure locate this ongoing colonization in the geographic space of Europe as well. So it's not so simple what I'm saying, that it's messy, and when we are like thinking where to decolonize, it's and how it's the geography is important, but it's not by any means like super self-evident. How does it work? So about decolonizing knowledge, Walter Mignolo, who's philosopher and semiotician, who's very much developed this train of thought, suggests that this epistemic disobedience and delinking are the ways of approach this challenge of coloniality to our thinking. And in this paper in, now I forget the journal, but it's from 2009. You can ask the references from me later if you want. He also emphasized that it's not only about mind, and it's not just this thought process, that also it's, and I think that's something that we could explore in a bit more. But so how he phrases the challenge here, and now I quote, "The first world has knowledge, the third world has culture. The need for political and epistemic delinking here comes to fore, as well as decolonizing and decolonial knowledges, necessary steps for imagining and building democratic, just, non-imperial and colonial societies. Who and when, why and where knowledge is created." So this is, of course, like if we want more just futures, engaging with decolonial thought is important. And the ways to do it are maybe to focus on these questions on who and when, why and where knowledge is created. And maybe, like, I think exploring this question, like, really why, if we know, or I've been thinking that if I, as this white Finnish-speaking person at the University of Helsinki, want to engage with decolonial thought, why do I want to do it? And like, and then moving on to the also maybe to the how, but first like these basic questions, that why am I doing it? And then I thought about saying maybe just briefly what does this disobedience and delinking might mean. Enrico Gutierrez Rodriguez suggests that what does this epistemic disobedience in practice like? How could we do it, and what's that? So she emphasizes exactly academics' role as allies in different decolonial struggles. So actually engaging with the stuff that happens outside of the books written by dead white men, and also outside the university institution, and also having this dialogue between institutionalized and non-institutionalized knowledge practices. So this is not to say that we should just totally abandon the institutionalized knowledge practices, but they should definitely be in dialogue. And dialogue, of course, means that we are on equal levels. So taking seriously the different ways of knowing beyond university. Looking at the time here. Yeah, so this was kind of my general ideas about the, like very briefly, what's the decolonial critique in about in abstract, and now moving to the bit on race and racism, which is kind of like specifically what my own work has been about. Also, and what I would like to suggest is that these popular discussions on racism, particularly in Finland that I follow, I think they can learn a lot from this decolonial critique, and this is something we can keep in mind. That I'm now not sure if I followed Juho's presentation thoroughly, but you were talking about or identifying racism in this conservative right-wing political thought, right? Which I'm sure it's there, but I get, like, my position is that maybe that's a bit obvious. Of course, we know that it's there, and I think maybe this when interrogating these questions of decoloniality, maybe it also leads us to think, or observe how race and racism function beyond that, and how maybe all of us are somehow complicit in that. And it's just it's the product of particular historical processes, and it's the world we live in. It's not like racism is not just this like a product of someone being evil, but like having this more structural view on it. But so on race and colonialism and coloniality, Maria Lugones, who's also one of the central theorists of the decolonial thought, she's done this work on race, gender, and sexuality and how coloniality kind of functions through them, or this is how they become lived also. And as she suggests, colonization invented the colonized. And this is kind of how I understand that race works, that it's this way of categorizing people that we inherit from this process of colonization, and as coloniality, it still lives with us, and it's kind of how reading all these people, I would put it, it's the kind of colonial difference, or this modernity coloniality thing applied or kind of displayed on human bodies or human beings. And when I say race, I guess maybe some of you think this pseudo-scientific race theories, which is part of that history, but going, like, taking the decolonial time frame also seriously, so it's also an older theory than this, or older, not a theory, but it's an older notion than than simply the thing that the racial scientist, for instance, of Uppsala University started in the 19th century, but it goes back to the 15th century at least. And also it's, of course, our phenotypes have a lot to do with it, but it also works as multiple attributes. So how race or racialization as the process of race function are that they are read from through languages we speak, educations we have, cultural habits, and so forth. So it's a complex system, and I think it's like when we are talking about epistemic disobedience, decolonizing knowledge, it's something to keep in mind that race and racism kind of function also maybe in the way that where we recognize knowledge and which kind of ways of knowing we see worthy. If it's not an old dusty book written by a German male person who died a while back ago, it can still be knowledge. Okay, now I'm trying to be a bit provocative and funny also, but no one's laughing. So thank you for that vague attempt. Yeah. So kind of, I just wanted to say that it's like when we are talking about, or if we want to engage in this decolonial critique and attempts to decolonize, we need, like, it's essential to think how we are complicit in racism as structural system. And some of us, like myself, are in a like very privileged position in that system, and whereas some kind of bear the burnt of that system, but it's also the way I see it, like everyone can contribute to that system in multiple ways. So even you can be complicit in upholding that system. Maybe it's easier from certain positions than others. But equally, everyone can do that, and everyone can also participate in dismantling that. To know how to do it might require a lot of listening and learning and unlearning. Yeah. But then, like, this was a bit on race and racism, and now, like, for the last 3 minutes, maybe I was thinking of saying so what does this then mean in practice? Because I kind of really would like to take it seriously that it's not just this process of thought, that it's not just that. Honestly, I don't see the point of calling it decolonial critique and just writing another journal article and going about the business as usual. I think it's also about something else. And I would be kind of curious, maybe the discussion we hopefully have soon could be about also that what you think it's about. So I would have shown you these couple of pictures. But maybe you've heard about this, and also maybe you spoke about it yesterday, but I kind of gather that maybe not. But you've heard about this student protest, like Roads Must Fall, that started from South Africa, and then like many in the UK universities, why is my curriculum white, and all that. And I guess like how I've heard this protest cited here, and it's of course important, is and the why is my curriculum why it kind of pinpoints that, is that the question is which books are read, cited, circulated, or also like translated. Tutkijaliitto now has this interesting project of translating some of the very important decolonial a text to Finnish, which is great, but yeah, so that's like one question, that what are the books and those of you who are have the power to assign books to the curricula at the university, what do you have there, and how do you feel about that? Like, how's that contributing to the decolonial struggle? So that's an important question, but I would be very adamant also that it's really not only about which books are read, and it's not only about reading and writing, especially when we're talking about the curricula, and I'm thinking at the about the Finnish university now, that is very white and quite exclusive. So if those exclusivist structures are not addressed at the same time, I think it becomes very weird if we just engage in this project of changing the books and if we do nothing else. So there's the question of institutional access and practices, and how are we willing to learn and unlearn there, or then also sharing resources, thinking that well, at least until recently, when Finland, for instance, had pretty good access to all these online databases with all the articles, and then scholars in some other countries might not have that. So, and also just research money. How do we, like, it's about these, like, very material practices that maybe this is something to open up. But then also, like, the unlearning part the way I get the decolonial critique, and I think maybe the presentations in the afternoon open this even more, that it's not just like it's not going about the business as usual. So, like, also really maybe thinking how the knowledge practices are different, and we should maybe start to do some very, like, different type of things. I have, like, a couple of things maybe in my mind of like how I've thought what could be done, or what type of things can be the answer. But I'm also very curious to hear from you, that maybe you are engaged in some kind of practices of decolonizing knowledge and academic practice. So what are you up to? But maybe that's a good place to end. I exceeded my 3 minutes. I'm really curious to hear your thoughts and reactions to this presentation. Thanks.